Hello, everyone. I'm Lucas Lynch, CEO of Midwest Dairy, and welcome to another edition of Dairy on the Air. Today, I'm here with Dr. Lloyd Metzger, director of the Midwest Dairy Foods Research Center, and he's here to talk to us about the research and projects that are coming out of the Dairy Foods Research Center and really previewing the priorities for 2019. Dr. Metzger, it's great to have you here with us today. You've been serving as director of the Midwest Dairy Foods Research Center now for more than 10 years and have seen a lot of ideas and innovation for dairy during that time. Personally, I know we go back even further than that. 25 years ago, I remember working with you while you were a master's student and I was an undergraduate at South Dakota State University. So it's really great to be with you here today. And I think the listeners would love to learn a little bit more about you and your background. So tell us about yourself.
Great to be with you, Lucas. It's amazing that 25 years ago you were washing test tubes and I was a graduate student.
Was I any good at it?
No comment.
Okay, fair enough.
But we've both come a long ways. I can't believe we're both that old now, actually, right. Too.
Admittedly, I agree.
So I'll go through my background a little bit. It starts out on a dairy farm. That's the best part about me is I grew up on a registered Jersey farm in Northwest Iowa. And learned about milking cows, learned about how hard it was too, and really was a great motivator to go to college.
Sure.
From there, went to South Dakota State University. I had actually had some relatives that had gone to South Dakota State, had done very well in dairy manufacturing, and it was connected to dairy. That really piqued my interest in that whole area.
Give me a little bit of background about your family farm.
So I grew up on a registered Jersey farm in Northwest Iowa. We had about 130 cows at the time, so we were big. The reason that farm was big was my father had 15 brothers and sisters.
Wow.
Yes, okay. So I had 15 uncles.
Lots of advice.
My father actually started the farm with his father. So he was one of the older brothers, and he actually got the jerseys going and the dairy farm started. Over time, five of his younger brothers became part of a corporation they put together that included this dairy farm as well as some cropland.
So some fantastic family background, you know, and I can reflect on that. You know, I had an older brother that went to South Dakota State, and that kind of opened the door for the conversation about my own career.
Yep. And really wasn't sure there was going to be a place on that farm for me. You know, as growing up, as a little kid, you want to do nothing but be a farmer.
Right.
But it gets complicated when you have five uncles that are working with your father in a farm. And then my father said some of his smartest brothers went to South Dakota State in dairy manufacturing. So Uncle Virg Metzger and Uncle Harold Metzger.
So icons in the industry, right?
Icons in the industry doing very well. Virg went to Kraft and worked for more than 40 years for Kraft, is Mr. Velveeta.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I had that legacy and background going. South Dakota State's a pretty good idea, and dairy manufacturing is a really good career. It fits so well with what I'd learned in the dairy farm. That got me started at South Dakota State in dairy manufacturing.
Sure. Well, and actually, where you started from, but also where you've kind of come back to, you know, when you think of icons in the industry, and really no surprise to a lot of us that have seen you in your career these last two or three decades, how you now hold the Alford Chair. What can you tell us a little bit about that?
So the Alford Chair is a unique position at South Dakota State. It's named after Alfred Neff and Alfred Gosenbach. Those are the two brothers that actually started Valley Queen Cheese in Milbank, South Dakota.
Okay. Okay. And so that's as an endowed chair, why is that important?
So that the position that I hold is paid for by an endowment from the Gosenbach families. Okay. And the Neff families. So they've put money into South Dakota State into a foundation, and the interest from that money pays my salary. So I'm actually not paid by the state of South Dakota. Well, I'm paid, but the money comes from this endowment from a gift that the founders of Valley Queen had given. It gives a lot of freedom because that's a position in our department that the state doesn't have to come up with money for. So it's a nice, prestigious position, but my story with Valley Queen goes further back than that. They actually provided scholarships to me when I was an undergraduate. And most of my tuition was paid for at South Dakota State from a scholarship that they had founded. So it really got me started and interested in dairy manufacturing. And now, 25 years later, I'm actually at a faculty position that they've also founded. At the same time, that facility is processing more than 5 million pounds of milk a day. They're helping dairy farmers by processing and paying them well for the milk that they've purchased. They've done that forever. They really support the dairy farmers. They support the community in Milbank. So it's a great story.
Well, what a common thread. You know, as you think about the icons of the industry here, we're two icons of northeastern South Dakota who paid it forward and have really a family legacy here of supporting this industry. And it, you know, even on our family farm, I remember marketing our milk off the farm to Valley Queen. So interesting how small the world can be sometimes in the dairy community.
Yeah, and well, even the Jersey farm that I grew up on, in that era, they didn't get paid extra for the fat and protein in their milk. That wasn't the pricing system that we had. Valley Queen started paying on a cheese yield formula. That forced some of the other manufacturers to change how they were paying. And in the end, we ended up selling our milk to Wells Blue Bunny because they wanted the fat for ice cream, but we wouldn't have got the cheese yield premium had it not been for Valley Queen stepping in and starting to pay on a cheese yield formula and paying farmers what their milk was worth based on the components that were in that milk.
Oh, wow.
We really come full circle to that today. But it started 25, 30 years ago.
If you go back to that opening story about washing test tubes, you had mentioned something to me a couple of months back that stuck with me, is that the work study dollars that I would have received at that time working in the science lab and with the master's students, providing some support, was likely to be dollars from Chekhov that welcomed me to early fundamentals of career building in dairy science. Is that right?
Yeah, we'll get into the Midwest Dairy Foods Research Center in just a minute, but the way that system was set up almost 30 years ago now, and I was actually a graduate student at South Dakota State when that system was set up. So graduate students, unlike undergraduates, actually get paid to be at the university. So undergraduates pay tuition to take classes. Graduate students actually get what's called a stipend. So they get paid to stay at the university, and they're doing a research project and getting a master's degree. That's the way that system works. And the reason they get paid is that student, after his undergraduate degree, could have gone off and worked for a company. And to get them to stay at school and go to more school, you'll pay them about one third of what a company would have paid them if they went and got a job.
Okay.
So they stay at school for an additional 2 years and do a research project. Though a lot of the research projects that we do are funded by dairy farmer Chekhov dollars. One of my project that I had as a master's student was funded by Chekhov dollars. It was some work on reduced fat cheddar cheese. And as part of that project, we made a lot of things dirty. Okay, and you were one of the people that helped clean up all those things that were dirty so we could keep doing work in the lab.
Well, I really appreciate you as a special guest here today. Clearly, as you're listening in, we have a real, I'd say, a modern generation icon in Dr. Metzger. And, well, I'd say just listening, it's fun to have the rest of this conversation with you because there's so many insights that you bring to today even. Let's talk about the research center that's part of Midwest Dairy, but ultimately how that folds up into the National Dairy Council. And if you could, kind of parallel the world of where you're at today as the Alford Chair, as you mentioned earlier, at South Dakota State, and how you work in both those worlds.
I'll try to explain it, but it's complicated and takes about 10 times before somebody actually gets it.
Okay.
Because it's a system that's really developed over time. So the Midwest Dairy Foods Research Center involves several universities across the Midwest. So we've got University of Minnesota, we've got South Dakota State University, we've got Iowa State University, we've got University of Missouri, we have Nebraska involved, and we've got Kansas State involved as well.
So really a virtual center.
It's a virtual center in that there's several universities connected, but there's actual infrastructure related to the center at the University of Minnesota. So University of Minnesota is the lead institution. The money comes into that institution and kind of gets distributed out from there.
Okay.
But what we're trying to do is make sure we have expertise at the land-grant universities in the Midwest related to dairy, so we get those employees coming out like myself and like you did over the last 25 to 30 years, but also have that capability available to do research on dairy products that will benefit U.S. farmers. Okay, so that's the objective of the center, is to do research that will benefit U.S. dairy farmers, because we have these dollars coming from U.S. dairy farmers that are going to pay for this research. So the first thing that I ask as the director of the center is, are we doing research on the right things? That's the first thing you have to determine, is what are we going to do our work on? And my main concern is, are we working on the right things? So we've set up a system to evaluate our research proposals and figure out what kind of research we're going to do to make sure we're doing research on the right things. That's question number one. The second question is the right person doing it? Do they have the right facilities and expertise to do it? And then do they have the budget and equipment to be able to do what they say they want to do? Okay, so we have this drawn out process that we utilize to make sure we're doing the right things or working on the right things, and then making sure we have the right people, facilities, equipment, and budget to do that. So it's a pretty complicated process, so I'm going to give you a quick run through on what that actual process looks like.
Okay, and then is industry involved in that?
Yep.
So that's part of where you're...
Yep, that's part of where I'm going now. So the way that framework works is step one occurs in April of each year, and step one is getting together a group of industry sponsors. So we go out to the industry and we talk to manufacturers, packaged food companies, suppliers of cultures and ingredients and equipment, and we ask them if they want to be part of a program that develops research priorities and determines what kind of research we're going to do at this group of universities. And by the way, companies, you don't have to pay for that research. We just want your input on what research should be done. Now, there is one little caveat. To be able to come to the table and give us your opinion, we want you to pay us $5,000 a year. That's what we make them do. And as of right now, we've got 30 companies that agree to do that. So a group of people from 30 companies comes to the university, and we do this every April. We switch the meeting between South Dakota State and Iowa State University. So every other year, it's at that location, trying to make sure to make the drive easier for companies in one location versus another. Because again, we've got 30 companies that are actually across the entire United States that come to this meeting. So what we do at that meeting is brainstorm about the biggest issues that the industry is having in four different areas. So the areas that we have relate to analytical tools and testing methods. So I talked about that RVA machine.
Sure.
So one of the most important things we do relates to equipment and tools we have to test products. Because a big issue we oftentimes have is a manufacturer and a buyer or a seller may not be speaking the same language when they're talking about a cheese, for example. They're trying to describe what's wrong with it. And a lot of it will relate to the testing method you use and whether or not you're testing it the same way. I liken it to two people speaking different languages. If they try to communicate with each other, it does not go well. Okay. So you have to figure out a common language, common discussion, so you can figure out what the issue is.
So that's the importance of the uniform testing equipment.
Or uniform testing methods.
Methods, okay.
So we have a whole category related to that. You know, what are the problems you're facing as far as testing? A recent one that happened not too long ago is iodine. We had this whole issue about iodine levels being high in milk powder and some of the export products being too high in iodine. Why is that occurring? What's the testing methods we can use? What's causing it? So,
okay.
Just to give you an example of something like that.
So something in practice and getting to the bottom of it, right?
Exactly. The second thing we look at is safety, nutritional profile, and flavor of dairy products. That's a whole category. We got to worry about nutrition. We got to worry about safety. What are the food safety concerns we're dealing with? You know, what do we do to mitigate them? That's got to be an area that we're going to deal with. So we specifically ask them for their issues in that area. And then we always want to look for the opportunity to develop value-added products. So we have a lot of different streams. It used to be that whey wasn't valuable. So for a lot of years, we did a lot of work on whey to increase the value of whey. So wherever in the dairy system we have a low-value stream, we want to figure out how to add value to that product. So we have a category specifically for that. And then we have a final category that relates to the manufacturer functionality and quality of dairy products. So do you want a cheese that melts better? Those kind of things. Are you having a problem in the manufacture of a particular ingredient that's causing a quality defect that you need help with?
So if I'm watching a television commercial and there's this beautiful cheese pull on a slice of pizza,
yep.
Is that some of the work that you're talking about?
Absolutely. So one of the first things they want in that cheese is they want this stringy stretch, and they need it to happen. And why does it not happen until the cheese gets to a certain age? And then why does it stop happening after that? So that'd be a perfect example of a quality issue that a manufacturer is having.
Well, a ton of science going into what we maybe take for granted as consumers.
Yeah, but I want to go back to our process a little bit, where the first step in that process is having these companies come in and tell us what our problems are. And the reason I do that is if I don't go to the companies and I go to the researchers and ask them what we should be working on, every single one of them will tell me that they need to work on what they're currently working on just a little bit more.
Okay. So the bias, just... the bias of a researcher, it may be very different than that of the problem solving of industry, which is what the farmers have been stepping in for.
Yeah, the farmers want us to solve problems for the industry, and the industry is very happy to tell us what their problems are. And the industry doesn't want to talk about solutions. They just want to tell us what their problems are, and then our job is to figure out how to fix them.
And probably no shortage of challenges out there.
Absolutely. So the criteria that I have to look at, or the lens that I look through as the director, is, okay, they have these problems, but does it fit within the scope of something that would benefit the U.S. dairy farmer? So just because industry has a problem doesn't mean we should fix it. Will it benefit dairy farms? Needs to be the first question that gets asked as we go through that process.
Okay, well, a lot of moving parts. You said there's a 30-year history. What have you learned over the course of those 30 years? Are there any trends that maybe are encouraging or maybe alarming to you that you would like to call out?
Learned a lot in that period of time, but nothing I would say that's overly alarming. It's encouraging to me that we've been able to get a group of industry together that are willing to talk about their problems. So it we've been using this particular process for over 10 years now, and it's fun to see the group come together and talk about their issues. Companies that are in competition with each other will talk about what their problems are and what issues they're facing. And then to see a researcher, instead of just going off and working on digestibility of shoelaces, they're focused on something that they know is important. And researchers really want to work on something that will help someone. So to see the light come on with the researchers and go, I've got this technology that I can now use to fix this problem that is going to help a manufacturer, that's going to help a farmer sell his milk. It's neat to see that come full cycle.
Sure. Well, as we're kind of coming to the end of our program, I wanted to also ask, how does the work that you do roll up across the country? How do the research centers of the National Dairy Council, and there's a lot of moving parts there.
Yeah, because we're really one of several research centers. I specifically talked about the Midwest. Now, there's another group involved in our research planning process, and that's a group from Dairy Management Incorporated, which is the national organization. And they come to our meetings, and they actually help to review the proposed research projects that we have. And they look at the project and compare it to projects happening throughout the entire United States and make sure there's not needless overlap, and to make sure that it's a coordinated effort with the national organization. So those four big areas that I talked about, analytical testing, manufacturer quality, sensory, those are broad categories that we work with the national organization to determine, to make sure we're in those four areas. So it's actually a coordinated effort, even though we're just focusing on what we're doing in the Midwest.
Wow. I think when you reflect on how industry and our farming community, how it's changing, how our university landscape is changing, the coordination that's required coast to coast is even more important today probably than ever before.
Absolutely, and the problems that we face in the Midwest are the problems they face everywhere. So there's no reason when you learn something in our region, we can't apply it to somewhere else. And concurrently, when something is learned in a different region and we can apply it to our region, we need to make sure we have access to that information and do it.
Well, in being part of a global economy, are there areas of research that, when we think about the global market access of the dairy farming production, when 1 out of 7 days of U.S. milk production today is exported, are there research projects that are global in nature that are coming home to us?
Absolutely. A lot of that does relate to food safety or quality. Spores are a big thing.
Spores.
So spores are a unique organism that we're spending quite a bit of time on now. And if you don't know what a spore is, think of it as a bacteria that has a winter coat on. Right?
Okay.
Everybody knows
like
what
a parka.
Yeah, like
right.
A parka. Everybody knows what a bacteria is. You can have good and bad bacteria. But a bacteria that is a spore tends to be a bad bacteria, but it has a winter coat on.
Okay.
So this bacteria has a winter coat on now. So now when we throw heat at it, or we throw cooling at it, or we do anything we want to try to kill it, it sits there happy as can be because it's got a winter coat on.
Okay.
Okay.
And we want to kill it.
we're trying to kill it. And it's sitting there going, good luck,
But we talk often about the unfiltered conversation, and we're having one right now. So that spore, for example, a storytelling here of science, that spore that has that extra coat on it, now is a problem if it's in the product and it's being exported?
Well, let's say that a lot of times we're exporting powders. Because, again, go back to that water conversation we have. If we're going to move product a long way, it can't have water in it. So the products that we move overseas tend to be dried.
Okay.
When a product is dried, if it has a spore in it, when you go and take that dried powder and you now put it back into solution with some water, what happens is the spore now takes his winter coat off because the environment is nice now. Not nasty like it was before.
Okay.
So he takes the coat off and now starts growing.
Thus the problem.
And grows to a high level, and now the product that they made from this powder has a nasty taste. It's either bitter, it might be rancid, it might gel instead of being a nice fluid like it was supposed to be, so it creates all these problems.
So it sounds like to me that the work of the research center and the coordinated effort across the country and really having industry of 30 companies, for example, coming in and sitting down with you, there's real work there that's not only identifying what research projects have to happen today, but real-world applications of that research for tomorrow. As we grow in this global market access, it really connects a couple of dots for me as I'm listening to you.
Absolutely, and it's not just about doing the research and getting the research outcome. It's now taking that information and applying it to the industry and getting it implemented. A great way to do that is part of our system, because the companies are already there, they're visiting, they're talking about the problems. So when we have a breakthrough, you wouldn't believe the side discussions at that meeting that start to occur to make sure the information that we're generating gets out to the right place. Also, the best way to get information out is to hire that graduate student that just worked on that research project. So the student that just figured out how to deal with the spore coat, how to get it off, how to kill them, if I'm a powder manufacturer, I'm going to hire them, right? I'm going to implement that strategy as fast as I can. It's a great way to get the technology adopted as fast as possible. So sometimes we forget that one of our biggest outcomes is the people we educate and then send out to work in the dairy industry. And myself and you are part of that.
Absolutely.
That came out of Dairy Farmer Dollars. So those employees that are helping to secure the future of dairy products came through this system. So it's not just about the research, it's about the people that are generated as part of that research.
Well, Dr. Metzger, or Lloyd, as everybody calls you,
that's what I prefer.
You're a real friend of the industry, and clearly as you listen to this podcast, you can understand as an educator your ability to connect science to storytelling and really making things relatable. That's one of the great things that I've enjoyed about you over the years, is that I always learn something, and you have a great approach to helping us understand maybe a complicated issue more in layman's terms. And for that, thanks for your service.
Well, thank you.
Well, again, as we conclude another episode of Dairy on the Air, I want to say officially thank you to Lloyd for joining me to share the valuable work being done at the Midwest Dairy Foods Research Center and across the country and the whole research centers that are funded through Dairy Farmer Investment. We appreciate your leadership in driving research and innovation in dairy. It's pretty cool to see a career, and you're only mid-career. You got a long ways to go to retirement, so hopefully you're not thinking about that anytime soon. We love what you do for us, and it's very evident that you still have a passion for the business. With the number of options consumers have in the dairy aisle today, it is increasingly important for our industry to be at the forefront of innovation and offer products that not only meet the needs and desires of consumers, but also continue to bring excitement into that dairy category. The passion that you show here today, Lloyd, is clearly, there's a lot there still to be done. And if you were to give one last word of encouragement on innovation, what's the challenge that the industry has in front of it?
Well, consumers are starting to drive the bus, or they have always driven the bus, and sometimes we've been slow to realize that. So we're talking about this change of trying to see things through the consumer perspective and making sure to address that. That's really hard for a researcher who doesn't interact with a consumer. They actually interact with the manufacturer. Consumers right now, one of the things they want more than anything, is they call it clean and clear labels. So they want to understand the ingredients that are in the product. They want to understand how they were made. They want to understand how they were put together. As a food manufacturer, the old way of doing things was to use whatever ingredient, call it magical foo-foo dust, whether it's a starch or something with a really long name that's an emulsifier or a stabilizer or a carrageenan, and we've got all these ingredients that we use to fix problems that we have. The consumers don't want those. They want three or four ingredients. They want to be able to go to the cupboard and and see those ingredients in their cupboard, and if their food are made from those ingredients, they like that. Now, we've just spent 25, 30 years coming up with all these things to be able to fix problems that they had. You know, make the cheese not melt the way we wanted to by adding an ingredient to it. Now we've got to change that thinking. So we've started to do that at the Midwest Dairy Foods Research Center, fundamentally understanding what's happening in the product and going, okay, we don't need to put that ingredient in. We can change how we process it a little bit. We can change the ratio of our dairy ingredients that we're using, or we can use this special dairy ingredient that now has a clean label that we can put on the product to be able to make the characteristics that we want and make a product that the consumer wants.
Thank you for explaining that, because the innovation is, and really, if we're committed to giving consumers an excellent dairy experience and joining them where they are, and if they're moving to a clean label format, that's got to be just really taking the food industry as a whole and really tipping it on its head a little bit from the conventional progress that we've made over the last three decades. Now we have to re-engineer a little bit the formulation.
Yeah, it's re-engineering the formulation, but in reality, we have a lot of the information to do that. It's a different path to the same point, and it's taking into account what consumers care about. It's not that big a deal. If that's what they want, you know, it might cost a little bit more, but they're telling us they're willing to pay for that, and that's what they want. So we better pay attention to it and figure out a way to do it.
Yeah, and the brand or the company that's not listening to their consumers, then
we'll end up making private label.
they're going to move in a different direction.
Yes.
Right. Well, again, to our listeners and to you, Dr. Metzger, thanks again for joining us as a special guest. And thank you for tuning in. I hope you found this discussion about the work the Midwest Dairy Foods Research Center is doing to lead dairy research, innovation, and education valuable and informative. Again, I'm Lucas Lynch, CEO of Midwest Dairy. Thanks for listening, and I hope you find other episodes of Dairy on the Air online at MidwestDairy.com, or you can look us up on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you get your podcasts. Until next time, thanks for listening.